Good morning and welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm Liz Kremmel, not Lynn Smith, like the order of service says, and I'm your board representative for today. We have a variety of announcements. One is that this is our third Sunday nature hike, and we invite you all to join us. You could either carpool from the church at noon today, or meet at the Scuppernog Trails Nature Trail. That's the trails across the street from Ottawa Lake Campground. It's not the same as the Scuppernog Trails, like skiing, cross-country skiing trails. So you want to turn right on Z, the first Z that you come to, and across the street from Ottawa Lake are the nature trails. And after that is going to be a bonfire with marshmallows and hot dogs at Ottawa Lake. So it sounds like a fun time. Also, next Sunday is our Thanksgiving dinner, which is a potluck. So please sign up to bring your favorite dish in the social hall after the service today. And I'd like to introduce Robin Reed, who has an announcement for us.
Good morning. Are there any people out here who were wondering what this little tiny sticker was for? Here, I'll help you out. This is what it looks like, actually. And it's chalice lighters. And it's a program that's been in working for UU's in the Midwest districts, and including our church. We've gotten $10,000 towards the building, towards the purchase of this church. And it's a great program, and we have brochures out on the table. And if you're not a member, we hope you'll pick up one of these and read it. And It's not expensive either. It starts at $10 for a donation, and but you can give $50 if you want. So,
thank you, Robin. I invite you now to greet those sitting around you. If you are a visitor, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. Also, there's a variety of information on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk to you about that also. If you're visiting us with your children, it's our custom for children to remain in the service until after the offertory. Your child is welcome, at which time they then go to the religious education classes, and your child is welcome to join their respective class or remain in the service. You also can join them in the class if you'd like to reserve. And we do have a nursery that's just located outside the door to my right, your left, that can provide child care during the service. If there are any visitors who are comfortable doing so, we'd love to welcome you warmly. If you'd like to introduce yourself, please do so at this time. All right. Well, everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. There is a conversation corner, which is a good place to continue any discussion about the service. Please put your phones on silence at this time. And I hope you'll find this morning's service fulfilling. We now will have the prelude.
Good morning. The opening words for today are, look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. We're now going to do the chalice lighting, and I have been instructed to tell you that the melody is the same, but the words are different. And the words are in the order of service, and this is a sung chalice lighting. Now we're going to have the story for all ages, and our Director of Religious Education, Carrie Dumas, is going to be reading for the children. And she has a special presentation this morning because it's going to be on PowerPoint so everybody can see these glorious pictures.
Yeah, so I'll just stand over here. Can you find me all over here? So Reverend Jane is going to be talking about how our faith draws from many world religions today. So we have a story called Sacred Places, and it's got some neat pictures. So children, you can just stay with your parents, with your families today. I mean, you could sit here if you want, but you could stay with your families. So we're going to see some pictures of some places where people worship pretty soon. The first picture that we're going to see when it comes up is a picture of a cathedral in France that's really beautiful. Ooh, that's not very much light, but I think I can still see. How are we doing here? This is a new idea to project it on the screen. And we're learning. The projector just has to warm up a little bit. Okay. Can we see that? So let's go to the next slide. So the story starts telling us that people all over the world have made special places where they gather to worship, celebrate, meditate, and hope. These are sacred places, such as this mosque in Niger. And here's the United Church of Christ in Acworth, New Hampshire. So that's in our country. And then there's a pagoda that's in China where Buddhist people worship. They are places where your spirit sings and your mind is filled with wonder, such as this temple in India. Some of these places took hundreds of years to build, such as this cathedral in France. Some are hard to reach, such as this church, which is also in France. And then there's this church in Greece, where you have to walk up some stairs to get to the top. Others are just down the street. This is in the southern part of our country. And some aren't buildings at all. This is a river in India where people go to pray and cleanse themselves and receive blessings. There are places people go to welcome those just born, such as this baptistry building in Italy, or to remember those who have died. These are spirit houses at a church in Alaska that are built over graves. There are places like Jerusalem, which represents many, many faiths. These are sacred to people with different religions, such as this Wailing Wall or the Western Wall. And then there's the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, however you pronounce that. And then there's also the Dome of the Rock, which is where the Muslims worship in Jerusalem. People have many different ways of worshiping in their sacred places. This slide is a mosque that's in Turkey. And there's also the temple, a Jewish temple in Canada. And then this mission church in California, a representation of that church. People come to this sacred place to pray and meditate. It's a Buddhist shrine in Korea. People gather in these sacred places to worship with family and friends. This is a Quaker meeting house. And then there's also a synagogue that's in Israel. And people flock to this sacred place from around the world. Millions of people come to the Kaaba in Saudi Arabia to pray. Sacred places fill your heart and echo your beliefs as you pray quietly, such as in this beautiful mosque in Turkey, or sing loudly with a joyful voice. And some sacred places aren't made by people at all. Can just exist right in nature. So that's our story. Thank you for listening.
Please join now in the singing of our first hymn for the day, number 193, Our Faith is But a Single Gem. Now is the time for our offertory. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream.
As noted in the order of service, now is a sacred time when we invite all to share great joys or profound sorrows with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring a microphone to you. When the usher brings a microphone, please briefly tell us your name and the concern or joy you wish to share. I will light a candle to visibly represent your joy or concern to be held in our thoughts and prayers. In the sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. First, I will light the memorial candle to acknowledge the many conflicts of our world. May a peaceful resolution be found to them. I invite you to share your joys and concerns.
My name is Kelly. Excuse me. I'd like to light a candle for my parents who celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary yesterday. Also for today, which would have been my brother's 39th birthday, and for a friend of mine who's having some surgery, my friend Pam, tomorrow. Thank you.
My name's Jennifer, and I'd like for you to light a candle of joy. We found out last week that our daughter Carrie is 12 weeks pregnant, so the end of May we will be grandparents.
And I'm Sue, and I have a candle of joy for bringing another teenager into the world. Abby will turn 13 in a couple of days, and having a mix of her old friends and new friends over at the house last night was chaotic but really fun. And also a candle of concern.
We have a good friend who was diagnosed this last week with some serious, fairly advanced cancer. Mm-hmm. And we're very concerned for the family.
Thank you. I'm Mike. Candle of joy for my daughter Emma, who added to her swimming legacy at the state meet yesterday, winning her third straight 100-yard butterfly and helping the Arrowhead Warhawks graciously and in a very sportswomanlike manner crush their competition. I think the score was 303, the next closest team at 181. So, lives on.
I'm Betsy, and could you light a candle of concern for a friend named Corey whose mother passed away this past week?
Would you light a candle, please, for Chris Street, who died this last week? Chris was a member, his mother was a member of our congregation for many years, and Chris was part of our RE program, and he died an early death.
Candle for Lois Walls. She passed away about a week ago.
Could you please light a candle of joy for the Charter for Compassion? I encourage everyone to go online. I think it's just charterforcompassion.org, and it's really beautiful. Brought tears to my eyes, and it's a wonderful precedent.
I will light one more candle for those joys and concerns we choose to keep private.
When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night, at the least sound in fear of what my life and what my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. May it be so. Please join in singing now number 388 in your hymnals. This is Dona Nobis Pacem, which is a familiar tune to the majority of you, I'm sure. We're going to be singing it in a round, and the accompanist is going to play it through one time first so you become familiar with the melody.
The reading is called Religion by Vincent B. Silliman. Let religion be to us life and joy. Let it be a voice of renewing challenge to the best we have and may be. Let it be a call to generous action. Let religion be to us a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us serve more eagerly the true and right. Let it be the sorrow that opens for us the way of sympathy, understanding, and service to suffering humanity. Let religion be to us the wonder and lure of that which is only partly known and understood, an eye that glories in nature's majesty and beauty, and a heart that rejoices in deeds of kindness and of courage. Let religion be to us security and serenity because of its truth and beauty, and because of the enduring worth and power of the loyalties which it engenders. Let it be to us hope and purpose, and a discovering of opportunities to express our best through daily tasks. Religion, reuniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere, holding before our eyes a prospect of the better life for humankind, which each of us may help to make actual.
The title of my sermon this morning is The Cross Under the Pines, and I'll begin with a short quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. The purpose of life is not to be happy. It is to be useful, to be honorable, to be compassionate, to have it make some difference that you have lived and lived well. It all began with a question. The rest is the story. And it's always stories we are drawn to which tell us about ourselves, isn't it? So how to begin? Once upon a time, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Or simply, there once was a church. There once was a church in the town of Merton, near the eastern edge of Wisconsin, where the Great Lake of Michigan lay, still and vast and cold. This church was an ordinary church, like so many churches are. Nothing remarkable about it, really, except for the unique consideration of it being built in the round. That was something to note, but only briefly, since once noted, it was easy to forget that piece when one observed that it was built close to the ground, which gave it a low profile. And it was covered in rough-hewn cedar shingles, weather-beaten in a New Englandish sort of way, making its low profile even lower in some respects. Indeed, the church was hardly noticeable at all when you thought about it, and its situation on the corner of K and E was really a blessing, for if it were not located there, I think it might not be noticed at all. I drove up to church one day a few weeks ago, as usual, for my office hours, and although I had been making the drive now back and forth from the big city to this small township for quite some time, on this day, who knows why, I looked up and I walked as I walked toward the church. And in looking up, I saw a rather high, pointed spire reaching toward the sky. I was not expecting this for some reason, and I stopped and looked again. Yes, it was definitely a spire, and it was located smack dab in the middle of the roof. I thought, I wonder. Yvonne was in the church office when I walked in, and I asked her the question that led to the story. And the question was this: did there used to be a cross on this church? And the story was this: once upon a time, this was a Lutheran church. And then it was a non-denominational church. And then it became our church. And yes, there was a cross on it. Silence. She said no more. I waited. Nothing more but Yvonne's sweet smile. She seemed a bit flushed to me at this point, but I could have been imagining it. And, I persevered. And now there isn't one, she said. What happened to it, I asked. A weighty pause ensued. It got taken down. Now I was getting really interested, and Yvonne visibly less so. Nonetheless, I pushed on with my questions. Who took it down? When did it happen? And how did it happen? I wanted to know. Oh, Jane, really? She quietly said. It all happened quite some time ago, and it was really quite an ordeal. It needed to be taken down when no one in the neighborhood was awake, so they wouldn't be upset about it. Now we were getting somewhere, I thought to myself. What a great story. Now this was getting interesting. I could just imagine it. The stealthy assembly of folk gathered at dawn. The light in the sky just beginning to cut the darkness. And the entire town of Merton fast asleep in their beds. Whilst, lo, the cross was being brought down from the shingled church on the corner of K and E, carefully, quietly, secretly. How exciting. Who took it down, I asked. A few people, was all she said. I didn't press for names. That would come later. What did you do with it, I asked. Silence again. Well, she said, that was a problem. What to do with it once it had gotten taken down? It was quite large, you see. We couldn't exactly junk it. And we couldn't take it to be recycled. I mean, how would that seem? And we couldn't give it away. Who would want it? Who could use it? This was the most Yvonne had spoken thus far, and I didn't want to interrupt her flow. I have some pictures of the process, I think, somewhere. Her voice trailed off. Really? I interrupted, excited again. Pictures? Where? Oh, I don't know, Jane, she said. Sorry, I'm sure that she'd mentioned that part. I knew I should stop the questioning, but I just had one more. Where is the cross now? I asked. She looked at me. I think it's out in the grass somewhere, she said. What? I exclaimed. Out here on our property, there's a cross lying somewhere in the grass, just lying there in the acres. Where? Can you show me? Poor dear Yvonne. I'm sure she rued the day she started telling me this story. I don't really know where it is, she said. Well, can we go out and look for it? I continued, reaching for my jacket. Pause again. I'll go look for it, she volunteered. You wait here. And if I find it, I'll come back and get you. I didn't like that idea. I mean, her car was out there. She might escape. And I wouldn't know where to begin to look for that cross on my own. I'll go with you, Yvonne. It's okay. I tried to reassure her that I wasn't really as nutty as I seemed, that my enthusiasm was a normal response that anyone would express were they to find there was a cross lying out there in the grass. Yvonne very kindly led the way. Unable to control my delight as I strode beside her out the front doors of the church, I exclaimed, "I'll write a sermon about this. It's great. The cross in the grass. I'll name it." Yvonne turned to me quickly. I don't think that's such a good idea. Poor Yvonne, held captive by my creative thoughts. I reminded myself to remain silent, to not be so boundless in my delight. We walked toward the side of the church, toward a group of tall pine trees. "I think it's over here," she said, as we walked past a small shed at the edge of the pine enclosure. "Yes, there it is." And there it was. Lying on a bed of pine needles, encircled by four large conifers, was a 25-foot-long, slender aluminum cross, resting and at peace. We stood at its foot and looked upon it quietly for a moment or two. "I'll call the sermon 'The Cross Under the Pines,'" I couldn't help uttering. Yvonne just looked at me and just said quietly, "Oh, dear. I'll see if I can find the pictures of its coming down." At 2 o'clock that night, I awoke with a start, awakened by a dream where I was thinking of that cross and how silly it was that it had to be taken down when the neighbors were still sleeping so that they wouldn't be upset by its being taken down. "Oh, how silly of those neighbors," I heard myself say. And at the very moment I said that, an image flashed through my head, and it was that image which made me sit bolt upright in my bed. For it was not the cross I saw being taken down in my dream, but the Star of David. Suddenly, the words, "How silly," slapped against my conscience, and I realized in a flash that it was I who had been silly with the delight I had experienced in the story of the cross being taken down and knowing no one knowing what to do with it. It was I who was silly, thinking that people shouldn't care about such things. It was I who was silly in seeing the cross as merely a thing, a symbol of the Christian faith, yes, but nothing more than that. When in my dream I saw the image of the cross being shifted to the image of the Star of David, the symbol of the Jewish faith, the faith of my mother's family, suddenly I could see how I would have felt if I'd been awake in the early dawn of that morning in the town of Merton when the people of the church on the corner of K and E were taking down the symbol that meant something to me. I would have felt suspicious and worried. I would have wondered what they were going to do with it, if they were just going to junk it, or if they felt a respect for it, and if, in their hearts, they cared what happened to it. The symbol of the Star of David represented not only the Jewish faith, but it represented the people of the Jewish faith, of which I was one. Suddenly, the story of the cross coming down was not delightful to me any longer, but something important to speak about, something important to attend to name and to discuss. It mattered to me that that cross was lying there under the pines, forlorn and forgotten. But why did it matter so much? The cross was who we used to be as Unitarians and as Universalists, because we were solely Christian. But over the centuries, as the Enlightenment rolled in, and with it a broader concept of what life should embrace, philosophy as well as religion, as the Great Depression swelled across the globe and humanistic thoughts of the greater good for all came to the fore, as the civil rights movement slammed against our ethical and moral view of who gets treated in what way and why, and caused us to join more than our voices, but to give our lives in standing up for what we knew must change. We became a part of the bigger world, and as such, as a religion, we have evolved and progressed beyond, well, beyond not only Christianity, but beyond looking at any aspect of life and the world through one lens only. As Thomas Paine wrote, "The world is my country, and to do good is my religion." Yes, so it is. That's why we had to take the cross down. That's why we would have had to take any religious symbol down if that symbol limited who we were, what we believed in any way. Ours is not a religion that tells others what to believe or what not to believe. But neither is it a religion that brooks abuses or shunnings or condemnations or threats. Religion is to be, as Vincent Silliman said, a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us serve more eagerly the true and the right, unites us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere, holding before our eyes a prospect of the better life for humankind, which each may help to make actual. Sitting upright in my bed that night, I wondered what should happen to the cross that was lying there under the pines, which had for so many years been lying there in all weather, year in and year out, where animals ran across it and birds lit upon it, and the storms of winter and the blazing sun of summer strained its aluminum and compromised its integrity. First, I thought it should be brought out and stood upright in the field somewhere around our church. And then I thought that over time we could make other religious symbols of the same height as the cross and place them in the field too. But this seemed not only expensive, but probably a little too overt. And then I thought that maybe the cross could get melted down. Can aluminum be melted down, I wondered, and made into the symbols of each of the five world religions and placed somewhere on our property? That would be affordable and doable, and representative of our UU faith. And it would give integrity to the cross, because in this way it would become a living piece of the history of this church once again. The same, but different. Was this possible? Well, here's where the miracle part of the story comes in. All stories have to have a miracle part. That's what the "and they all lived happily ever after" bit is really showing. A miracle. I mentioned my dream to Lynn the next day, and without blinking, she said, "Phil has an idea for that cross. You might want to talk with him." So I did. And not only did I hear his plans, but I got the rest of the story. It involved four brave men with tenacity, wit, and a ladder, who embarked on the mission of disassembling the 25-foot cross from the 25-foot steeple. In the telling, it almost sounded like a Polish joke. Only instead of how many men it took to screw in a light bulb, it was how many men did it take to take down a cross. Two men on the uppermost rungs of the ladder, one of whom had lashed himself to it, and two more holding its legs, and two screws at the top of the steeple, holding the cross in place. And then there was the ground supervisor, calling out loudly words of encouragement and common sense. He was saying that should the cross come crashing down unexpectedly, no bravado was called for, and pointed out a possible shelter under the overhang of the spire, which one could leap under should this occur. And occur it did. Upon the hoisting and lifting of this tall and unwieldy cross, up, 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 off the top of the steeple, and up, 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 more into the air, the cross took its own initiative, and immediately upon experiencing freedom, spun 180 degrees, spiraling down and crashing head first onto the roof. The men on the ground ran to safety, but not before one of them experienced the face of the cross missing him by a mere 4 feet, before it ricocheted off the roof, finally coming to a rest. Breaths were caught, and the cross was easily lowered down the side of the church, where it was then brought into the arms of the men on the ground, who ceremoniously walked it to the pine tree enclosure and laid it to rest. And now for the end of the story. 2.5 years after its journey off the roof of the church, where it had heralded to the neighborhood its Christian faith and beliefs in Jesus Christ being the Lord and Savior of the world, the cross has now sacrificed its life to help create a larger message. Out in our memorial garden, you will see today a beautiful fountain, a chalice, if you will, with a ball of fire coming out of its center. A flame, and standing sentinel in a semicircle around this chalice are 5 long aluminum posts, atop of which will be symbols representing the 5 great world religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. And through these posts, which are parts of the once noble cross that stood upon this church, water will be drawn up from the ground to a hole near the top of each one, and then the water will cascade from these holes. Water from Judaism and Christianity, water from Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism. The water from each will cascade into the chalice and become one thing together. One religion for the world, our symbol of Unitarian Universalism, a symbol for all and to all. There once was a church, and there once was a cross, and now there is more. The end. Please join now in singing a hymn. The words are printed in your order of service. And this is a familiar hymn, Let There Be Peace on Earth. And so we're just going to play the very final portion, and then please rise if you are able and sing these last songs together. This is the time in our service where we have a chance to discuss whatever talk has taken place from the pulpit. And in this congregation, it's called a polylogue. So if anybody is interested in saying anything, commenting, asking a question, they're invited to do so at this time.
Hi, my name's Wendy. I enjoyed your sermon. The five major religions you noted going out in the Memorial Garden is news to me, and as some of you know, I have a problem that there's no representation of Dianic or goddess religions. I can't see really well, but I think that's on the altar cloth even. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, so mm-hmm. That was a big design flaw. So... sorry, if I was included in the planning, I would have voiced this much earlier.
Right.
There I are hope five, we can rectify it.
Right. Well, there are five major world decisions. That one is not a major world decision. There are lots of world religions and things, but that does not mean this is just the beginning of this venture. And so I assume and understand and know so well with this congregation that everything is in creation. and that there will be delight and pleasure in continuing to create what is going to be out there.
Hi, my name's Terry, and I was just thinking how lovely it would be if some future Sunday we would gather around that and sing the song we just sang, Let There Be Peace on Earth. I think that'd be really lovely.
That's a very nice idea.
Hi, this is Al. At the time of this takedown, my career involved insurance, and as I recall, I was the agent for this church, and I just wondered, not that those of you, and I know your names, need to stand and attest, but I'm assuming you did sign those release forms?
Well, I'm the Yvonne in the story, and... and one would assume I'd have something wise to say, but I did enjoy hearing your version of the story. And I will be wondering when we have future conversations how it will end. But I do appreciate the version you gave it. I do think it's important to look at through different eyes and through the ordinary in our lives, what we do in our lives, and perhaps put it into a story and say, how does that story go? And to make, and for me, that's making meaning of our life. And I appreciated today's story.
Hello, I'm Lynn, and to continue with the symbolism of the fountain, but I like it, and I like the chalice. But that chalice is also a bird bath. So here we're encouraging, you know, our principle of, you know, interdependent web of all existence and the birds coming and joining in and encouraging that. So
I'm Robin, and as I look up at the chalice and I see what's under it, I'm reminded of my late wife, Edith, who embroidered that panel there. And we were talking. I also helped to build the blackout or whiteout covers for the windows here for when we show movies. And it was suggested that we use these symbols on that too. So that's something we have in the works.
My name's Colleen, and I'm a guest today. And what brought me here today was your title for your sermon. And I'm not currently a member of any church. The last time I was in this building was 26 years ago for a wedding. And it's just a moment of providence in my life, because today you're taking this walk out to Scuppernog, and 28 years ago, I was pregnant with my son when my fiancé was killed, and it was 2 weeks before we were going to be married, and the last picture we had together was out at one of those springs, and I've never returned, and I've wanted to do that. Thank you.
Well, welcome.
Hi, my name is Helen, and along with a number of other individuals here, I was at the closing when we purchased this property, and I believe it was the minister's wife at that time, and she came up to me, and I'm not sure, there were like 16 people in the room, I'm not sure why she came up to me, but she said, the only thing that I remember her mentioning was, take care of the apple trees, because I think her husband was really fond of those apple trees, so I didn't hear anything else, and we had to be sacred about anything else, but she said, take care of those apple trees. And I don't know if it's because I'm, you know, the big nature lady at Girl Scout camp, but that's, I remember, we didn't make a promise, but that was what her concern was. So.
Hi, I'm Colleen.
Just while we were singing Let There Be Peace on Earth, I just had a very clear memory of singing that at Christ the King Catholic Church in the midst of the Vietnam era and, you know, being young and worried about war and everything and just really wanting that to come true. And as much as we all, you know, move on from the religion that we're raised in and push it aside, it's kind of nice to have that one thread of continuity, something that stays with us.
And now we're old and worried about war, so.
Sadly. I'm not going to create any problems. As I note that years ago, on the wall back of the altar, there was a large cross. I'm not going to ask where it is.
Oh. Another cross?
Okay, it's on now. So, you know, forgive me, I'm hoarse and getting over a sickness, so my voice might go up and down here a bit. But I was just pondering some of the discussion on the major religions, and the fact that there's five pillars is really primarily a design issue related to how tall the original cross was and how much we could... how high they had to be able to have the water flowing into the central fountain. But anyway, Anna Friss is going to make little caps, and that's where the insignias are going to be for the major religions. And I was thinking maybe what we could do is have like 10 caps, and then alternate them and just interchange them over time, because you know there's five majors, but on the front there's six. And I went to the UUA website, and there's like 10. So there's symbols for all kinds. So maybe we have 10 and then can solve the problem that way.
Right. A very beautiful idea and solution. And, yes, on the front of your order of services are these world religion symbols.
I'm Susan Taylor. In preparation for my annual pilgrimage down to my sister's house for Thanksgiving, and she is a devout Christian and very strong in her views about that being the religion of the world, I made an appointment to get my car repaired by a gentleman that has a shop who's also a Christian, but he's very open-minded, and he and I have had many wonderful conversations about the difference in our faiths and things like that. So I met with him this last week, and while my car was being repaired, he and I got on that subject, and I told him about my apprehension of going down to Tennessee and how I know this is going to come up as a subject, because it always does, and how do we reconcile this or find some common ground? So we had a very nice conversation. But while we were talking, he asked me about Unitarianism and what our beliefs were. And I always have a hard time kind of, you know, giving the soundbite about that. And I knew he would be open to hearing it. And I'm glad that you talked today about the different world religions and how we borrow from each of those. And if anybody has any, if anybody's ever answered that question for somebody who's not familiar with it, I would love to have kind of a soundbite on how to explain what it is to people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the opportunity to create your own soundbite. I'm going to be teaching a Building Your Own Theology course starting in February. And through that, there is readings and discussion and writing your own credo and coming up for yourself, how do I really want to express what this is for me? Also, in the order of service, on the back, are the seven principles, and that is, I mean, you have to kind of know the gist of them, and it's not something you have to memorize, but it is what is our unifying factor of being Unitarians. We come religiously, what speaks to us is a very private and personal thing, but how we behave in public is what we all bring together, and these are the center things that we can all say yes, 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 yes to. So.
I'm Angel. This actually is the first time I've been here for your service because of other commitments going on. And I just want to say that you're just a wonderful writer and wonderful storyteller. And that was very enjoyable. And I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
My name is Chris. I've struggled a little bit with my daughter-in-law, who's Catholic, and she keeps saying to me, your church isn't really a religion, it's a community. It's a community, she's always saying. And Jane helped me come up with something that was rather short, and when we talked about it in the UU orientation last weekend, I came up with something short, and Jane helped me come up with something that it does come from religions, and because I wanted something small, and I didn't want any big disagreement with my daughter-in-law, but I really felt like it was, I felt dismissed when she keeps saying that to me, and I didn't want to, she and I get along well, and I didn't want to argue with her, but I was able to come up with something very short. My son-in-law is in the UU seminary, and whenever I ask Joel, he gives me about an hour-long description of what to tell her, and I'm like, Joel, no, I need something small. So Jane has helped me come up with something small to say to somebody too without handing out a card, but it's been really helpful to me. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. There is also a really they want to hear your take your pencils and pens out now.
Well, what she said was sort of a historical, just really quickly, maybe you could say it, Jane, what you had said. It was just historical that the Unitarians had come from a congregational background and something else, I'm not sure, congregational background, and the Universalists came from Baptists, then the Methodists. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that in itself, and she elaborated on that. You ask her, she could tell you a little bit more, but it was enough for me to feel like our religion came from religion and that we've evolved into what we are now. But it just gave it validation for me to say our religion came from other religions and mm-hmm. it's not just a community, mm-hmm. even though it's a great community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On the East Coast of the United States, there are Unitarian churches on just about every corner. And they don't know what a Lutheran church is. And on the west coast of the United States, they also know what a Unitarian is because they draw from so many world religions and they're so open because of the west coast. But in the Midwest, it's more Lutherans and Catholics simply because of those people who emigrated here so long ago who brought those religions with them. So it is not such a known religious tradition here in the Midwest. But I do want to say that there is a wonderful book called A Chosen Faith, and it's co-written by Forrest Church and John Burens. And John Burens used to be the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association in Boston, and Forrest Church was one of the co-minister of All Souls Church in New York City, and he recently died. But they come from very different vantage points, very different perspectives, religious upbringings, and the way that they write and articulate things, and they co-wrote this book. So each one, I think it's just about every other chapter, is their voice, one or the other's voices. And it's a wonderful, it's very easily read, and the language is wonderfully, beautifully written, not academic and dry and hard, but really good language. So it helps a person who's reading, it's only about this big, and a person who's reading it says, oh. But also it's a wonderful book to hand to loved ones who don't really understand and say, just read this. Even just the beginning of it or the introduction of it is a lot. It's a very lovely book. And the library committee is has ordered it, and so it will be here. But I would encourage you to just look for that book and buy it yourself. It's truly, I think it's, if you only have one book that talks about Unitarian Universalism, that is the one that I recommend. A Chosen Faith.
I would suggest that you consider who's asking the question, and let me be careful in how I say that. If the individual asking the question lives, how far do you travel to get here?
Miles and miles and miles.
If the person lives too many miles and miles and miles away, then you need a short answer and an intriguing answer to get them to explore. If they live less than miles and miles away, the answer is, you know, it's just so amazing. I can't really, let me, boy, I want to answer your question. The thing is, I think that if I answer your question, I'm not going to give you the best answer. Why don't you come to our church?
That's good proselytizing, Al. I believe in that. I think Unitarians aren't necessarily proselytizing because we don't try to convert anybody, but I think we do need to do a little bit more evangelizing, which is simply very respectfully speaking about what it is that we believe and why we behave in the world the way that we do. And we're very reticent to do that, and respectfully so, but I think if we can learn to do that in a less apologetic manner, I think it's many people don't know about this religion, and whether they want to join it or not, I think that they have misconceptions and will feel like, oh, I didn't really understand what that was. One of the things that I'm committed to doing during my year here is to have a pulpit sharing experience, and I don't know that I'll be invited to go anywhere else to speak in other churches, but I have already started to invite other religious leaders. And so, for example, the Episcopal priest from St. Ansgar's has agreed to speak here on a Sunday morning. And then I have a call into a Jewish rabbi and see, because his Sunday mornings should be pretty free to come. So, and I think in that way, too, if we're able to hear those other voices and ask the questions and expand our congregations by dint of personal interaction, because that's what life is all about, meeting people you don't know, talking to people you wouldn't otherwise necessarily have spoken to, and we're all pretty much the same when we scratch down below the surface and take the time to listen.
My name is Rob. Just for a final thought over here, I'd like to thank Phil and the Landscape Committee for the beautiful work they've done in our memorial garden, and also for his vision on reusing our cross into something that symbolizes us.
And for the merry men that were up on that roof that morning. All right, my closing words. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith divine living. Go in peace, and go in peace, and go in peace.